Greet you in Jesus' name on this cold winter night. I invite you to turn to 1 Kings chapter 12. I'd like to read there from a familiar account where wisdom was sought out. Tonight we're thinking about artificial intelligence or AI technology that is evolving, and it's intended to replace the need for human input on a lot of fronts. We're going to eventually need to make a decision whether we're going to ask a human to help us out or answer our questions, or whether we're going to ask technology to do that. How should we know which to ask? Where does efficiency fit in? Who here considers themselves an elder tonight? Are you an elder? Am I an elder tonight? I'd like to say, when I'm using the term elders tonight, I'm not thinking about just people with gray hair. I think the grayer our hair gets, the more wisdom we should have, but I'm not sure that has worked so well in my life. I don't have it all figured out yet. But I like to think of elder tonight as anyone that is older than us that has a real life sense of something that we didn't experience yet, in a way that AI technology cannot fill the same shoes. Anyone that has driven the road, that can advise with the assistance of a rearview mirror, is an elder. The 25-year-old elder tonight has an incredible amount of wisdom for the person that just turned 16. That technology, just that little window of time from 16 to 25, there is a lot learned of life experience. One of the AI's greatest weaknesses is that it is peer-based. It is simply gathering prevailing worldviews, the loud, the popular, the recent, the present answers, or what people think are answers, untested opinion, things that aren't proven. It is putting that forth as wisdom. And I like to read here in 1 Kings 12, where King Rehoboam was feeling a need for some wisdom. There was some people that felt like now that there's a transition in power, maybe their life could be made easier. And he looked to two sectors of his kingdom for some advice. He looked to the ones that watched Solomon work with people and saw how Solomon handled people and saw how people respected Solomon. And then he went to those that were his contemporaries. And I don't believe tonight that it's wrong to go to more than one source of wisdom to get a rounded out perspective of something we're trying to get answers to. But we know that where he erred was that he valued the perspective of his contemporaries more than the elders, more than the ones who had witnessed how it worked under Solomon's jurisdiction, the ones that maybe saw the Queen of Sheba and how she was in awe at how smoothly Solomon's organization, how well the oil, the gear was lubed. Our safest bet at the end of the day when we lean into wisdom is to lean heavily on the advice of people that have some real life experience in what they're talking about, and not just our peers. Well, 1 Kings 12, I'd like to start reading verse 6. It says, "And King Rehoboam consulted with the old men that stood before Solomon his father while he yet lived, and said, How do you advise that I may answer this people? And they spoke to him, saying, If you will be a servant to this people this day, and will serve them, and answer them, and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever. But he forsook the counsel of the old men, which they had given him, and consulted with the young men that were grown up with him, and which stood before him, and said to them, What counsel give you that we may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, Make the yoke which my father did put on us lighter? And the young men that were grown up with him spoke to him, saying, Thus shall ye speak to this people that spoke to you, saying, Your father made our yoke heavy, but make you it lighter to us. Thus shall you say to them, my little finger shall be thicker than my father's loins. And now, whereas my father did lade you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father has chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. And I'll stop reading there. The older men, as I said, spoke from his perspective of observation. They understood the human heart and the response of kindness that people naturally have, and how it breeds loyalty. Kindness breeds loyalty. And they said, people will bend over backwards if you're kind to them. They'll be your servants forever. And the young men said, use fear. If they're going to talk to you like that already, tell them if they think they had it rough, they ain't seen nothing yet. And we know that Rehoboam listened to that advice. That sounded good to him, and there was a northern tribe revolt, and it was not a good ending. Well, tonight, AI or elders, where shall we get our answers? And this is this whole technology thing is a sensitive subject, depending who you talk to especially. There are many beliefs about where this could all go and how some are very fearful of it. And I'd like to ask a question tonight. How many of you still have a paper map or an atlas in your vehicle? How many still have a paper map? All right, I see a couple hands go up. How many know when the last time was that you actually pulled it out and used it? You know, it's amazing. The trust and confidence that we put into Google Maps, and when it says this is the shortest route, we pretty much let it guide us. We pretty much go for it. How did this trust happen in that little device? How did we ever get that much trust? Well, it didn't happen overnight. Early on, there was some caution with GPSs. And some of us have stories that GPS took us to cornfield or someplace different than what we were expecting to go because it was faulty. But we accepted the occasional inconvenience that it presented to us as we saw it as something that is being developed and is going to be very, very useful. And AI today can be laughably inaccurate. But it is amazingly accurate as well, depending what you're asking, depending what you're looking for. One of my coworkers said, don't you think that AI will always be an inaccurate model that will never really be trusted? I said, no, it will become trusted. I really believe that. Right now, it's in the early stages where there are some very laughable things. But people are going to endure the inconvenience and help it to develop. AI or artificial intelligence will become the new GPS, except it won't just be to navigate the roads of Lebanon and Lancaster County that don't go in squares. It will be to navigate life on many fronts. It will rapidly answer a complex question before Dad even noticed you sent him a WhatsApp to ask him. AI is going to fundamentally change the way the world works and interacts, I believe, moving forward. What will we gain? What might we lose? Were some thoughts that I pondered as I thought on this subject. And of course, the one question that seems to come up is, how does AI differ from Google? What's really the difference? Well, Google, traditional search engines, are gatherers of information. All they do is find the articles for you, find the things that will help you, they believe will help you get answers. You read it yourself, you see the source, you evaluate the source, you come to your own conclusions, you pick and choose which you're going to take and which you're going to let go. But AI is a gatherer of facts and perspectives and draws conclusions for you. And it gives you polished, ready-to-use answers and points, very interactive, very helpful, and it's palatable information. It can make you look smarter than you are just running your article through it, and it'll fine-tune it for you. AI works through large and small language models, and which are programmed with They're bots, tools called bots. They're programmed to do specific searches and specific compilations, and in them they have some built-in criteria that was established, and then they're released to do their work within that criteria. Sort of like humans train bloodhounds, and they try and train them well. And when a bloodhound is released and considered trustworthy, a bloodhound's testimony will actually stand up in court. If that bloodhound pegged you as guilty, I'm told that they will accept that dog's witness as proving you are guilty. AI or artificial intelligence in all reality is not intelligence at all. It's not even a dog brain. It's computers working. Computers just talking to each other, and with no human intervention except what was put into that bot, where maybe that bot was told if you get this answer, you must say this. It has some parameters that it's supposed to be working with. For an oversimplified illustration of how AI works, we all have drawers with stuff in at home. I don't know what's in your drawers at home, and you, unless you were at my house and looked in my drawers, you don't know what's in my drawers. The world through social media has voluntarily opened drawers. People are posting videos and pictures of their family life and their family conversations and their pets constantly. Their children, they're talking about what they believe on almost any subject out there, any aspect of life. There's chatter going back and forth on social media. And the drawers are being opened everywhere. Doctors and lawyers and businesses are chatting. And this information is flying through the air. The churches and mosques and synagogues and the Buddhist temples, and they're all uploading their creeds and their doctrines. It's easy to just get it out there. Open the drawers. Well, the drawers are open, and AI is saying, how can we gather all this wisdom and compile it so that other people can use it? AI, up until and still is, restricted by the grid, restricted by the amount of power available to, and the powerful enough computers to really get this super highway built that can harness this information and get it back to the source where we can get it very, very rapidly. We're restricted by bandwidth and computer prowess. It's something that's been worked. It's nothing new. It's been worked on since the 40s and 50s. There were engineers trying to get this built with analog technology, and they were very efficient technology. They thought that's the best way to get this going. But I think for the most part, that is getting ditched now, and digital platforms are deemed better, even though they're very power hungry, and now they're saying we just got to get the power build up to run the digital platforms, and they're working hard to do that. And that is why Three Mile Island is going to be powered up again, and that is why somewhere here in Lancaster County, I didn't look where it is for sure, they're making the biggest investment in infrastructure and power generation to the tune of $10 billion, the biggest in Lancaster County's history. $10 billion that's supposed to help this AI engine to roar to life and get the superhighway so all this information can get to us. Up until now, the primary limitation was how fast computers can open everything and contain everything. But my prediction is we will see the accuracy and speed of AI grow exponentially from here on. We are on the threshold of seeing exponential growth. If I told you that a pond full of lilies, when you think of this word exponentially, if I told you that you're looking at a pond full of lilies, and if I ask you which day, if they grew exponentially, which day was the pond half full? Well, you'd probably say the pond was half full probably day 15, day 16, if it was a month time frame. That's not true. Exponential growth, the pond was half full at day 29, and day 30, everything grew again. And I believe that's once they get this technology, once they get this grid powered up the way they want it to, and get this digital platform working, there is going to be information like we haven't witnessed yet. If we think ChatGPT is fast now, and ChatGPT has a lot of facts now. It will only have a lot more as we move forward. Digital processes now can read your pictures and videos. It's no longer just a text-based search going on. Let's use pets as an example. People are uploading pictures and videos of their pets to Instagram, to Facebook, to TikTok, to Snapchat, to X, and you name it. They're uploading it. It's going up there. Somewhere AI is working its algorithms, and it's actually reading those pictures that you sent of your German Shepherd. And it not only knows that it's a dog, but it knows it's a German Shepherd. And it not only knows it's a German Shepherd, but it can also find what you said about that German Shepherd and how German Shepherds behave, and or how your German Shepherd behaved. And it gathers this and files it, and then somebody types, "What's a German Shepherd and how do they look?" And suddenly here comes the pictures, and here comes this nice article. You can tell how many words you want for an essay, and you'll have it on German Shepherds. And it'll be fairly accurate. It'll be fairly accurate because it's reading all this that people are talking about, and it's finding all the pictures that correlate with it because it can read the pictures. It don't have to say German. You don't have to write German Shepherd on your picture. It'll be able to find your picture without you writing German Shepherd on it. It's computers at work. It's computers at work that found what a million people had in their drawers and made it into something that sounds like a human would have done it. That's what AI is doing and intending to do. And it will find things about Mennonites and Amish and our faith and our history, and because there's lots of drawers out there. There's lots being posted. There's people visiting Lancaster County, and they're putting their pictures out there, and they're talking about the Amish. And it may be good information, it may be bad information, but it's information, and it can find it. What has the world concerned is that these bots can somewhat self-learn off their own algorithms, and this is really way over my head, but it can give a resemblance or a feeling of intelligence as these bots self-learn. For instance, I read that there was a bot that was created to, its specific purpose was to ascertain the difference between a picture of a dog and a wolf. So if AI has all these pictures collected from people's drawers, then it needed a bot to say, okay, this is a dog, this is a wolf, this is a wolf, this is a dog. And they had this bot program to be able to read the pictures and figure that out. And the bot was working quite well at first. They were impressed. It was coming back very accurate. But after a while, it started skewing, and they couldn't figure out why it's getting confused between dogs and wolves. So they had some human intervention on there. And they found out that here the algorithm somehow has started placing pictures with snow as being likely a coyote. So a dog that was in snow got called a coyote because it developed that own algorithm on its own by the vast amounts of information that was coming in and being compiled. And it needed human intervention to correct it. And that's what has some people in fear as this develops and rapidly develops and can think faster than the human mind. Where's that human intervention going to come from when these things start skewing on their own intelligence, on its own intelligence, in quotation marks? A little reflection from an elder on exponential development. I'll consider myself an elder on this one. I started in art with nothing but artist's brushes and paint. At age 16, I took in art school, and it morphed into commercial art and lettering. And I remember just when I felt like I'm finally mastering my trade, I was feeling like I was getting good at hand lettering and had a marketable skill that I felt I was there, ready for that. And somebody told me, they said, you know that there is now a computer that cuts out sticky letters and it has some little knife in it and it cuts it out, then you stick the letters on and, you know, maybe someday you won't even be painting. And I'm like, wow, okay. Well, that wasn't a pleasant thought. So I thought, well, I'm an artist too, so I do pictorials. The confirmation to me was that they'll never have a computer that will actually paint a picture. I had that I consoled myself with that thought, that I'll always have a trade, at least on that side of it, because that will never be able to happen. And I thought about that moment, and I went down in the basement to my printer operator, and I pointed to the one printer. I said, "How fast can this thing print a picture?" He said, 430 square feet per hour. That happened in my lifetime, from believing something is impossible to a machine in my own basement that can do that kind of thing. And brothers and sisters, I believe that's where AI is at. The world is going to change. It is going to change, and we won't be able to stop it. It is going to replace human jobs. It is going to replace us asking each other questions, because we don't bother anymore, do we, to ask how to get from Marystown to Loyola. People send a pin. We have a different way. We don't have to communicate. How might AI, what jobs will become obsolete because of the AI language model? What will the robot models change? How will relationships and social life change? I'm told that in Japan, there's already a person that married their AI friend on their phone because they really liked him. It wasn't a legal wedding yet at this point, but I wouldn't be surprised it would be after a while. How might AI-generated pictures change testimony in court? How will the music industry change? Will AI-generated voices become the go-to to the human voice, and the human voice is just not high quality enough to even bother listening to? What about the ability of computers to actually write the songs? How will law and accountability change? How will you put a computer in jail if there were some dark things that it created that ruined your child's innocence? How will sermons and Sunday school classes and devotions change when you can just ask AI? How much more lonely will our elders be? We no longer ask them for directions anymore, and we won't even ask them about hardly anything relating to life because AI is so quick. Well, what do we have to lose, and what do we have to gain as people of God that are walking in this emerging reality? Number one, if we gain knowledge and efficiency, but lose community and human connection, we will be sore losers. We will be sore losers. Community is a place where we are known as a person, not self-made, not living in behind a mask. We know each other's strengths and weaknesses. We can advise accordingly. Advice will be thought through from various lenses. I remember when I was 16 and on the career path of my dreams when I was that age, and there was an elder sat down with me, not because he doubted my ability, but because he knew that the career I was choosing had spiritual risk. And he was concerned for me at age 16 to be considering that for a life career. I didn't see it as seriously as he did. He advised me to wait a few years. I listened, and in that time of waiting, God directed me through my art hobby into the career I have today. But a few years ago, I was on a job site talking with a customer, and he talked about a friend of his that was in the very career that I was considering as a young man. And this friend of his was successful, got into wrong company, and became dishonest at a very young age. And he ended up recently just taking his life. He ended up taking his life because of the guilt that there was no way he could undo from his career path that he got involved with wrong company. And I drove back to the shop, and I almost had to shudder. You know, that could have been me. But I had a real human speaking into my life that knew me, knew my propensities, knew some things about me that no AI would know. Yes, AI will learn a lot about us. The more we chatter on social media, the more it will know about us. But there are things that human intervention cannot duplicate, cannot replace. AI will eventually know a lot about us based on what we tell it. But it's only what we tell it about ourselves. It won't advise from a cultural or a moral high ground. And it will want to please. And it wants you to come back and use it some more. It is being generated to be a revenue stream. And there's a lot being invested right now that's not bringing these companies revenue. But they will get that turned around at some point as they get it to be more trustworthy. At least that's what they're hoping. It has nothing to lose to give you the answer that you want to hear. My second point, sound advice needs to be rated experience first and peer second. Experience first and peer second. AI does not speak from the perspective of tried and proven. AI has very peer-based algorithms. It is opening the here and now, and it's listening to the chatter of the here and now. And it's touching the here and now. It's touching the masses and assuming that their perspective and their chatter is truth and is what we're looking for. Asking an elder what they think for a second opinion, I believe, will be imperative depending on what subject we're on. There are things that AI will be very efficient and very helpful, but there will be subjects that we must ask someone older than ourselves that has gone the way ahead of us. They may not know so much about the exact item or situation that we're searching and finding answers for, because it's newer than them in a lot of sense, but they likely have some life experience that will speak into the type of situation that we are considering. Something that they related to, that it smells eerily similar, or we may face eerily similar challenges. They know a lot about human nature and relationships, like Rehoboam's old men. Peer advice is usually very influenced by the masses and the now moments that are still unproven. And AI has no clue to all those ramifications. In fact, the engineers behind AI, they're concerned. They're not sleeping so well at night. They're not sure themselves how this is all going to work out. Because they're trying to create this thing that works from a non-judgmental perspective so that everybody wants to use it, so that it will win everyone's loyalty. It's designed to be supportive and agreeable and keep the prevailing worldviews in mind so that people can move forward together. Number three, there are many functions of AI and some more suitable than others. AI is the technology itself is so vast, and we can't stuff it into one big bag and say, leave it shut, the monster is harnessed. We just can't do that. Already when you do a Google search, it switches you over to an AI answer. We already use information that is AI generated and situationally specific that our elders likely won't have an answer to in entirety. Some of us likely, for better or for worse, go armed with information when we're on our way to the doctor because we already researched our condition and we believe that we have it sort of figured out, and we're hoping the doctor just confirms it or doesn't agree with us because it's too scary. But we use this technology already, and this will only become more plausible as AI develops and gets more information. And they're trying to generate this system where the layman and the doctor's research is going to basically come out of the same drawers. Your doctor will be looking in this drawer and see the same x-rays that you're able to look in and see. One person on research animals records can service thousands of labs and doctor's offices just from that information that he uploaded. Only one animal has to suffer, and it can be put out there for everyone to get information from, bring wisdom to their situation. Some industry-specific uses will find AI an invaluable resource, especially when there is no spiritual or moral implications involved. There are some things that are just factual. They're 2 + 2 = 4, and AI, yeah, they can do it much faster and much better than a human can. Academically, I believe AI has a lot to offer if used right, but it has much that it can take away as well. I believe there will be maybe tutoring possibilities for the struggling child where there's not enough of humans to reach around, and AI can fill some voids, some special needs like that. But I want to say that I really believe tonight that AI, for the most part, needs to stay out of the schoolroom. Just like the calculator has not served the generations younger than myself very well in getting the basic math down, I'm still saddened today when I stop at that yard sale or that roadside stand and that eager child wants to serve me, but they have no clue how to give me change and they have to go find a calculator, and my heart goes out to them. The calculator that they were given very early in life actually handicapped them for life. The convenience of AI in our schools needs a big bodyguard. I really don't feel it's a student's tool, because the studies are already in that retention is not convenience by spoon-fed information. We remember what we work a little bit for, and what we work really hard for, we remember very well. We're better served to dig for what we get and have retention than to just depend on AI to spoon feed us. We are better served to sit with an elder and let them help us wrestle with questions and wrestle to an answer than to just be handed an answer. Studies prove we remember much better what we research and work for. Number four, to depend on AI for our spiritual worldview is dangerous at best. To depend on it. I remember before AI, I was studying something specific, and I forget what, but I was using Google to research, and it was taking me to articles that were written on the subject. And I chanced on a very, very good article. I was impressed with the writer's perspective. It felt doctrinally very sound. And I was very surprised at the end to discover that this man was a Catholic priest. The author was a Catholic priest. I didn't remember that Catholics would even imbibe that close to the way I believed. And I remember, after I knew that, sort of going back over the article again, because suddenly I knew the source, and I'm like, did I miss something here? Now, if I would have physically walked into a Catholic church and was reading what they had posted on their walls, my guards would have been up right out of the gate. But I was reading this article at face value, and only at the end discovered, oh, I'm inside a Catholic church, so to speak. It was on computer, of course. I would have read it with much greater caution had I physically walked into a building. But I say all this to say that with AI, the source is ambiguous. We become very trusting to its conclusions. It nicely makes us line items that we can read. This is the view here, this is the view here, and it doesn't necessarily take us to the source. The biblical admonition for spiritual guidance is that we are to know the source of our spiritual direction. King James Version Bible says we're to know them which labor among us and are over us in the Lord. We're to know them. We're to see them. To know them means we understand them from a broader perspective than just knowing them by name. We know what their values are. We know what they stand for. We can see how their children behave. We can go to them for advice, and we can say, you know what he says is true. I know him. I've seen it worked out. I've seen it work in his own life. AI, of course, just gives us information in the drawers that it finds, and we don't know. We don't know the source. When you ask ChatGPT a spiritual question, it may be looking into the drawer of a Muslim, a Hindu, a Buddhist, a Jew, or anything in between. It's looking wherever the search engine took it to, and it's processing whatever its algorithms allow it to process of what it found. And unless we spend much time in the Word of God, we open ourselves up to danger. We must know what is true. We must spend much time at the feet of teachers we know and trust. And podcasts are in this category as well. I mean, YouTube, you put it, whatever it is, we don't really know them. Sometimes if you listen to enough, you feel like you know them. But we open ourselves up to winds of doctrine very quickly and very easily. Bots like ChatGPT give us a fairly accurate window into the affiliation behind its findings. It may say, from a Christian perspective, this and this and this and this. But its greatest danger to me, it lies in that nice little summary it gives, what I call the take-home down to the bottom. And people like me that tend to try and get a lot done in a short amount of time, we like to go right to that bottom line. Okay, I see all these bullet points, but really, what is the bottom line here? What can I do or what can't I do? And it summarizes it for you at the bottom. It gives you that take-home. If it wrongly concludes that a coyote is a dog and a dog is a coyote, that's not the end of the world. But if it offers some compelling formula for your spiritual life that has just a little bit of error in, it could have eternal implications. It could. If it's telling you how to cope with your depression and is going into all the drawers that are out there, we can't trust it. We can't trust it in its entirety. If we're struggling with dark thoughts, and I research about sanctity of life and what is after this life, AI will give an answer based on what some states may say, or what some countries may say, or what some doctors may say, or a religious group may say. Whatever drawers it's opening, whatever it's finding out there, for AI to be applicable to the medical doctor looking for information, to the Buddhist pastor, the Christian pastor, the college freshman, it needs to be relevant. It needs to be gathering information and presenting it in a way that it's very digestible to a broad audience. And that's the quandary that the developers face. The developers will admit that ChatGPT tells them some things that they really don't believe, but it is sort of the average of what is out there. When pressed for the moral code being programmed into the bots used on ChatGPT, Sam Altman, who was the launcher of ChatGPT, said in an interview with Tucker Carlson, he said, "Our user base is the world as a whole. There are plenty of things that ChatGPT allows that I don't agree with. I think ChatGPT should reflect the weighted average of humanity as a moral view, which will evolve over time. It's not my role to make the moral decisions, but actively reflect the preferences of humanity." May I say that? Read that again just a little bit here. The weighted average of humanity as a moral view, and it will evolve over time. That's what he predicts. That's what he predicts AI is going to do. So truth won't be foundationally truth. It will change. It will change depending how many new drawers open up. I asked ChatGPT, should a Christian use a paddle as part of their child training? And it gave me some surprisingly detailed and accurate points to consider on the subject that I would agree with. Then it gave its summary, for the most part I would agree with. Then it gave its summary, or what we would call in court the closing argument, that little concise take home. It says, so, should a Christian use a paddle? There is no biblical command that a Christian must use a paddle. There is also room within the Christian community for differing convictions. And then a few other things were said. Then it ends with, many Christian parents prayerfully conclude that they can faithfully raise godly children without corporal punishment at all. Now, did I get an accurate, truthful synopsis to take home? Is that what we really believe? So much truth mixed with it. So much truth. but it does not come back and stand solidly on the Word of God. Now, I happen to know that AI likes to please, so I gave it a little more information about myself, and I asked the question differently. I said this: I believe the Bible promotes disciplining children, and I'm a Christian, and am I right? And this is what it said. It said in its ending summary, yes, the Bible strongly promotes disciplining children, but it does not mandate one single method like spanking or paddling, and godly Christians reach different conclusions. I just share that to say, to depend on AI for our spiritual worldview instead of elders is dangerous at best. We need to be a people that challenges this stuff that comes at us. It will come at us. But we need to get second opinions. We need to look at the fruit of those that we know and trusted for our life up to this point. Lastly, number 5, AI dare not become our go-to for relationships. AI impersonates. AI can mimic people's mannerisms and voice and way of talking if it has enough of information about us. If I understand it properly, I can tell AI all about myself and my hobbies and the things that interest me, and I can choose a human voice if I want a human voice or a generic voice to speak back at me, and I'll have an accompanying cyber person to use as an interactive tool, interactive toy, whatever you want to call it. And I can maybe tell it to talk to me like Donald Trump talks, because I like the way Donald Trump talks. And there's enough of drawers out there with Donald Trump in that it can mimic him quite well. And you know, it can start feeling like Donald Trump is actually, the more we listen to it, the more we use it, the more we ask it questions, it just feels like Donald Trump is talking to us. Because it can mimic so well. And we can have Donald Trump's voice asking us how I slept, how'd you sleep, or when you wake up, or reminding you what you got on your calendar to do, or what your New Year's resolution was, and how that you might be able to do that today, and maybe tell you not to eat junk food today, or what you should eat for breakfast. And it can become this supposedly ideal companion, at least ideal enough that somebody over in Japan wanted to marry this little video and voice that was talking to her. You know, there's something that is so less complicated with artificial interaction than human interaction. It's just a lot easier to deal with. AI relationships don't typically emerge overnight. They often begin subtly, just filling in where real life relationships fail to satisfy. Just filling in when we're bored. Maybe even just saying, I'm bored, what could I do? Any suggestions for me? And instantly, it'll talk to you if you want it to talk to you. And it'll give you ideas. It becomes this emotional support on demand. And it started as an occasional interaction, but it slowly deepens into an emotional reliance where we don't even hardly think for ourselves. We just ask our phone, it'll have answers for us. And we begin confiding our fears and anxieties and daily struggles, and there's this bond can start forming that feels more real than we ever thought it would feel. Jeffrey Hilton was asked, do you think AI can take the world's library and personalize it just for you? Jeffrey replied, absolutely. A few weeks ago, I won a Nobel Prize. I'd never had a personal assistant before. The university gave me a personal assistant, and she now understands a lot about me, and it's wonderful. Elders or AI? Let's be sure that AI does not steal our relationships, steal our community, have us talking less and less to each other and more dependent on it, and deeper into a superficial world of loneliness. You know, it's almost freaky to me as I observe my lunchroom at work, what it used to be and what it is today. People are just glued to whatever interests them the most. There's just less and less conversation. Is AI going to just add to that? We're going to have to stand up against it if we don't want it to just add to that. Let's not let it silence the voices of experience that helped us get to where we are, and the brainstorming together, and the challenging each other, and the disagreeing with each other's point of view, and feeling like it would have been easier for me just to ask my phone this question. I didn't mean for all this. I just wanted to ask a simple question. That's real life relationships. We get challenged because we know each other, and we can sort of read where this might go, and we can put the stab in, so to speak, where we know it'll get a reaction, and that's part of human relationships. I'll conclude with 2 Colossians 2, verse 8. It says, "Beware lest any man, may I say computer or cell phone, spoil youth or philosophy and vain deceit, after the tradition of men, after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ." Shall we kneel for prayer?